So hello, everybody, and welcome to our NEPT Open Coaching Call.
And these are calls where you can ask any questions you want, and you can share successes. It could be questions about content. It could be questions about cases. It could be questions about labs. So for tonight, part of the time, we're going to go over a Dutch test because Michelle submitted a Dutch test. And I know that these are tests that a lot of you are starting to run on yourselves. You've seen me explain, and we've done a lot of them on case studies, and you never get enough because they're complicated and there's a lot to learn. So the more you hear and the more we have recorded on these, the better. And I know a lot of these calls, I haven't been prepared and known in advance that we were going to do these, and I wasn't able to do a screen share. So I'm actually doing a screenshot video to see if I can get this recorded. So now we'll add it to our collection of Dutch tests and stuff. So I'm only going to do the screen share on this part of the call, and then I'll just stop the screen share and we'll just use the regular recording. So great. We had a lot of people, and I will say that I've gotten to talk to you a lot. I hope you're not getting sick of me this week. But between the three calls today and one yesterday, and maybe four calls, because Valerie was on the fourth call with the VLM people, there's just a lot of calls. And I apologize for that being all together in one place. But a part of it is that because I had a vacation, and we normally have a lot of these calls in the last week, and whatever it was, I've tried to make sure, we'll try to make sure going forward that we don't have quite so many calls in a week. But I appreciate a lot of you I'm seeing over and over again on the calls. So it's really awesome. So I'm going to go over this, and I'm going to open up Michelle's line so that she can respond and answer questions, because I really do like to have these for you, like doing your own SK studies versus someone else, because I can then ask questions and you can see my line of questioning and what kind of things I want to know when I go through it. And I'm just going to take a little time, because some of these we've gone through have been really like we've rushed through them. So here over here is the these little, what they call them, the dials, right? The dials. And the dials will give us a total, an overall look at what's going on with the body. So you get to see this kind of picture. When we look at the one on the left, is just giving you like a nomenclature of what it means. So the lower limit is over on the left. The high limit is over on the right. The ideal premenopausal range is up at the top. Ideally, you want to be somewhere, you know, towards the middle range of that. The postmenopausal range is below the low limit. And then that's that little purple dot there. So you want that to be above that. So they may go lower, but that's okay. We don't want it to go below that purple. Okay. So that's basically it. So we're going to have the dial for total estrogen, total progesterone, and testosterone. And as we look here, we see a condition called progesterone dominance. Do you see that, Michelle? So the progesterone is high, and I know you've been taking progesterone probably, and that's why I think we talked about that once before. So let's look at this. We have total estrogen that's kind of in a good range, right in the middle. We have very high progesterone. Typically, we don't see this naturally. We normally see this when there has been a supplementation. So if I didn't know Michelle, I would ask her. I know that she's been doing it, but I'd say, hey, have you been taking any progesterone? And Michelle, you have been taking progesterone, right?
Yes, I've been taking like the Best Weapon drops, like three drops at bedtime.
Three drops at bedtime. And does it help you sleep?
I don't know. I guess I've never really had sleeping problems. I did when my back was hurting so bad, but generally, other than like when I was having so many back issues, I slept and have slept really good my whole life.
Okay, so that's not, I asked, and the reason I asked the question, does it help with sleep, is because a lot of times people will be taking the progesterone at bedtime and it helps dramatically with sleep, and they find that amount that helps them. So had that been the case, I may say, you know, you're out of balance here. Yes, the progesterone's higher than the estrogen, but progesterone's much more protective, and I don't mind you being high if you're taking it for a reason, which is helping you sleep. I may explain like you can back off of it a little bit and see if that still is a problem. But since it's not helping with sleep and she was taking it to try to get these hormones in balance, I would say if you're taking three drops, maybe you drop it down to two drops. I wouldn't drop it out completely. And this is a mistake I see a lot of people make, is that, oh, my progesterone's fine, let me get off of it. And then you go, the other way. Much more dangerous to have estrogen dominance than progesterone dominance, right? There's so many things you're predisposed to. So it says it's working, but if you're taking 3 drops at bedtime, maybe you go down and take 1 or 2 drops at bedtime to still be getting it. Okay, and then you can retest. We always like to retest these things in 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, depending on the nature of what's going on.
So when I retest, am I retesting with the Dutch test or retesting with like a saliva test?
No, I would retest with the Dutch test. Yeah, you can't, it's really, you can't compare oranges and apples. It's hard, right? So you want to be able to compare so you know that you actually made a physiologic change to it. The testosterone is on the low side. Right? So we'll look when we see DHEA. DHEA is on the high side. And yeah, so we're looking at the DHEA being on the high side. Are you supplementing with DHEA?
I am. I'm doing the biomatrix drops like the pregnenolone, the DHEA, and the licorice root. And when I talked to the person at the Dutch place to kind of go over it, because I had never like done this test before, they kind of had suggested that maybe I decrease the DHEA from 2 drops to 1 drop 3 times a day.
That's what I would suggest as well. Good.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you don't want to completely go off of it. But what it's saying too is that sometimes when there's excess DHEA and low testosterone, you can actually get that pathway to move it and the DHEA can get converted to testosterone. But that's not happening in this case. So we'll look when we look at the metabolic pathways to see if there's any reason in there for why that may not be happening. And then, yeah, so then there's the cortisol and there's metabolized cortisol and total cortisol. So why don't you explain to everybody what they explained to you is the difference between it? Because I see you made some notes, so it'd be good to hear that.
Well, she just kind of explained the chart where, you know, you've got, like, I'm low in the morning and then kind of in kind of probably a good range and then, you know, at the high level and just under the high level throughout the day. She didn't really explain to me the difference between free cortisol and she didn't.
Okay.
I mean, I only talked to the gal for like a half hour, so she was like, you know, yeah. She didn't go into super depth on all of that.
Okay.
Yeah, good. So the reason she probably didn't explain it is because you're in, you're both in approximately the same range. The free and the metabolized are close. And when the free and the metabolized are skewed, then there's a reason to explain it why there's a difference. And that's usually the question. So the free cortisol is what's available and the metabolized is the total of what's created in the body.
Okay, so that's the two bottom dials next to the graph range, right?
Yes. Yeah, so you look at them, they're really close, the 101 and the 3600, right? And they're the metabolites, and we can look at those in more detail. But the metabolites...
So it would have been a bigger deal if one would have been way low and the other one would have been way high.
Yes, okay. And we do see that in both directions, so there makes a difference, yeah. So that's what we see here.
And as we go through
and we see some other cases, I don't want to throw confusion into the picture by saying, well, if it was this, it was that, if it was... Because I don't... The whole purpose of this is not to... You know, explain the Dutch test in detail. We will have lots more information about it, but it's to actually use this as a case. But if that was the case, then I would, yeah. And I think we've actually gone over some that were out of skew. So we go to page 2, and that's just the same things that showed on that page as numbers. And then there's the metabolites in between. So progesterone, they don't actually measure progesterone in urine. You can't, it's fleeting, it goes too fast. But you can measure the progesterone metabolites and the pregnenadiol and the pregnenotriol. Well, they don't do triol. They do just do alpha and beta. The meridian test pregnenadiol and triol. This one is the alpha and the beta. So I forgive me, but I don't know what the difference is there. Because I usually... Yeah, she didn't. Probably because it's not a problem. So... did she say anything about the progesterone as far as decreasing the amount you were taking?
No. The only one that she recommended that I decrease was the DHEA. She didn't even say anything about, she didn't even ask me if I was taking a supplement for progesterone.
That's interesting. Yeah. Whenever I see a progesterone dominance, that's what I question because it's not natural. You know, our environment is so estrogenic.
Well, she said maybe she looked at my handouts because I did list it on my form that I sent in. So she probably knew that I was supplementing with the progesterone.
Yeah, and you know, you can leave it at that or you could just drop it. You've been taking that level for a long time?
Well, I've been doing the Bezwecan probably for almost a year. I started with 4 drops and I probably decreased it to 3 drops, like maybe in, probably earlier this spring.
Okay.
My naturopath, like, said to go down to 3 drops.
Yeah.
So I did.
Yeah, and I think you can probably go down to 2, but you can verify that with your naturopath if you want to do that.
Okay.
We have the androgen metabolism, right? And you're low in your total testosterone, low end of the range, not low, but you've got imbalances here. And I don't know if they have the chart, but Meridian has an amazing chart which shows this, and you can see it. So let me just scroll forward to see if they have this chart in. That's just that. The pathways chart. I love this chart. Only it's on its side. I wonder if we can turn it. Here we go. So this is pathways, and this might feel overwhelming, and the more we look at it, the better. But I really like this pathway because it talks about the kinds of things that increase and decrease. So if we look for you, the ideal would be for me to have this side by side. But if we look at the testosterone pathway, right, we start with the DHEA, and DHEAS is what they measured, correct? Let's see. Oh, now I have to go back. You tell me. You'll just give me numbers. The DHEA was a little bit high, and it was, did they say it was DHEAS that they measured?
I don't think it says what it was. It just said total DHEA production. DHEAS.
Total DHEA. So it's total.
Etiocholinolone and androsterone.
Okay, got it. Okay, so the DHEA number include all of those. So if we look here, androsterone, here, was it androstenedione or?
It just says androsterone and then
etiocholinolone. Yeah, etiocholinolone.
And then the DHEAS.
Okay. I can't find it. Where is it? I'm looking on the side. DHEAS is above. So the total that they gave on the dial was the combination of the three on this page, the DHEAS, the androsterone, and etiocholinolone. Okay, good. Let's look back at the chart. Yeah. Okay, so that combination, so those are DHEA and its metabolites, so that's the total. And then you can see on that page the separation of them. So if we look, let's go back to that page so we can see it. Yeah, this is good. We see that the DHEAS is above the range. The androsterone is a high end, and then the etiocholinolone. So they're pretty much consistent. So we're not seeing like problems with the pathways of converting them. Yeah, that's when you look for it. But the testosterone, we have the testosterone being in the low end of the range. We have DHT being in the within range, so it's high in relationship to testosterone. Androstenediol within, and then the EPI testosterone, epitestosterone was low. So we're going to look here. And again, we're not going to go through this in exhaustive detail right now. We're going to go through more of this at Shine, and we'll go through more of it in the module for reproduction. But here's the epitestosterone, and that was the one that was a little bit low, right? And then testosterone was a little bit low, right? And the testosterone was on the low end. Where was the androstenediol?
It's got a 5A or a 5B.
Okay. Yes. Is there important?
The 5A one was within range at 51, and then the 5B was within range at 18.5.
All right. So those are in good range. But here we had the testosterone being low, but the DHT, dihydrotestosterone, being a little bit higher than it. It was in normal range, whereas the testosterone was at the low end of range. And that may not be a significant thing if you have not excessive testosterone. But I would look at this and I would be concerned about you taking testosterone to bring it up. Because my concern would be that it would convert to the DHT, which is a very strong metabolite, that it seems like you're converting more testosterone to it. And I may be reading more into this, but it's just, I'm just coming from a place of caution rather than anything else as we understand these pathways.
So it might possibly convert it to one of those that's already within range.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
And you want,
yeah.
Low.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Okay. And so that's, you know, you can look at, we'll look at it when we go back and I put this back on its tail. So that's the thing I would say, like, I want to look and say, well, would this person benefit from testosterone if it's low? But if it's on the low end and the DHT is really high, then instead of supplementing testosterone, I would supplement with things that help with the 5-alpha reductase inhibitors. So I'll show you that in a minute. Okay. And you see how testosterone, the male hormones can be converted to estrogens. This is just something I want to show people. And there's an enzyme called aromatase, and it's controlled by this particular, there's a gene.
You were talking about that last night on the call, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Either last night or another call, like the CYP gene, right? CYP19. So if somebody has an issue, they may actually have either an excess of aromatase, which is very common, and you see males with those boobs, they have excess of aromatase, and it's converting more of their testosterone, right? Males that end up with big bellies and big boobs, it's because their testosterone's gone down, but it's because it's more of it's being converted to estrogen. And what can happen if you just get that person supplemented with testosterone, if they have that aromatase overactive, they're going to end up with more estrogen. And that's not something we want. It can make the situation worse, or the testosterone isn't going to budge. So if you find somebody says, you know, I've been doing testosterone for 3 years and my testosterone doesn't go up, that's something to keep in mind, that they may have an excess of this aromatase, and the aromatase needs to be inhibited. And there are aromatase inhibitors. This is not significant for you, but I'm just using this as a learning. There are aromatase inhibitors, like saw palmetto's an aromatase inhibitor. Zinc is an aromatase inhibitor. So somebody with a zinc deficiency may have too much aromatase. What else? There's saw palmetto, zinc, borage, the omega-6 fats can be. So those are kind of things, and we can look at those, right? So this is a really good chart, and we're not going to go through this in detail. We will when we get to this module, but this is a really good chart to study, and they actually have it on their site. If you go to their site, and I think I actually might have posted a link to this chart in one of our newsletters, you know, the Clinical Pearls. If you guys aren't saving those Clinical Pearls, that's a mistake. So even if you don't want the rest of the email, just save those Clinical Pearls and just keep a file. Keep one Word doc or a bunch of Word docs with those Clinical Pearls, because there's a lot of like really stuff that I'm encountering when I'm working with people. So those are good things to save. Okay. And we actually should do that too. We should make a point of that. We have them all saved, but we should actually make a point of putting them in a folder, Lynn. Write that down. We'll talk to Stacy about doing that. Anyway, so you see this, like, I'm just pointing this out that there's so much richness in this test that you can figure out and find out so much about what people are doing, what inhibits, what enhances pathways. And the more you do these tests and look at these tests, we'll give you lots and lots of examples of these. And we'll ask permission if we can include yours in some of these examples, because
can use it however you want.
Okay, good. Great. Because the more we have a richness of library, and I don't necessarily have to put people's names, we can strip them out if we're going to use it as part of a module. But I think it's a really good thing. The more you see them, the more you learn. And also, when you run it, if you sign up as a practitioner there, they'll give you your first five tests for half price. And when you do that, they'll also let you talk to them. I don't know how many times you can call them and get consults with them for that, but they'll talk to you for half an hour and review the tests. So that's a good way to learn. And I highly recommend that, even if you feel like, I know how to do this, you talk to them. And Meridian Valley does that on their 24-hour one. And I've been doing those tests for years. And every time I spend the extra half hour, to learn more from them. So it's a really good deal. Okay, so I'm going to go back to, that's upside down. There we go. I'm going to go back to the page we were on and just get an idea. So what you're looking at when you look at a page like this, and also you can get it somewhat from the first page, but that doesn't show all the metabolites. You're looking here to see, are the metabolites in the same range, similar to what we do when we look at thyroid. And those of you who've looked at thyroids on these calls, we like, I love that Dr. Rind scale. And we actually put it in our master tracker because it might look fine that the hormones are in the right range, but one's at the low end of the range, one's at the high end of the range. And if that's the issue, then you want to look at metabolic factors that might be causing that. So in this particular case, the DHEA is above range and the endosterone is at the high end of the range and the eicosanoline is above the range, but the testosterones and all are on the low end of the range, which means when we look back at that chart, let's see if I can do it on its side. We look back at that chart, we're like looking at, okay, so what's happening here that's causing these things not to convert? What is it that causes the endosterone? Where is it? What's causing us to go down towards endosterone versus going to testosterone? And looking at those pathways can be very helpful. Okay. And some of these might be SNPs. Some of these might be a genetic factor. Some of them have nutrients specified that can help it. So that's the kind of thing that we look at here. So in your case, they're not significantly out of range, but they are. You've got high DHEA. And let me just turn this again on its side. So when we look at it, we're going, okay, so her DHEA and their metabolites are low. So are high, but the testosterone's relatively low comparatively. So was it, I can't remember, was it androstenedione? Let me just go back there for a second. It was endosterone and eicosanoline. Okay, so we're going to find endosterone and eicosanoline. And we go, okay, endosterone's down here. So, okay, so that one's higher, and instead of going across to testosterone, androstenedione, which is, what is androstenedione, high, low, or normal?
It was at the high end of the range.
Okay. So at the androstenedione, instead of it being converted to testosterone, it's being converted to endosterone. Why? Well, what does that? Well, it's a 5-alpha. Maybe it is a 5-alpha reductase thing, right? And we need to reduce the 5-alpha reductase so that we can have push it more there. So we'll talk about some of those 5-alpha reductase inhibitors, the zinc, the saw palmetto, the borage oil, or some kind of omega-6 can be high and the 5-alpha reductase is going too high. And if we can reduce 5-alpha reductase inhibitor activity, then we can actually push possibly the androstenedione over to testosterone instead of down to here. Make sense?
Yeah.
And the eicosanoline is a 5-beta reductase. And there's a page in here that talks about those, so I'll defer to that. So I'll show you where you can find that. Okay? Androstenediol, where was that?
They have a 5-A and a 5-B. The 5-A was within range. Both of them were within range.
Okay, so we've got, if we look at that though, if we say, well, the androstenediol, the 5-beta was within range, the testosterone was a little low, it means that there's more of the 5-beta activity going down here. So we're getting these clues that say, oh, let's look at these 5-alpha and 5-beta reductase inhibitors to see if we can have more of this go towards testosterone instead of down these pathways. Because see, we had higher DHT as well, and that's controlled by the 5-alpha. Make sense? So if we can look at what can we do to reduce mainly, I would mainly be concerned with the 5-alpha because the DHT is a dangerous metabolite. Not that yours is high, but we just don't want to keep, you know, I'd rather have you have...
Testosterone was at the low end of the range.
And the epitestosterone, which is over here, is at the low end of the range. So yeah, these enzymes are overly active, and maybe if we can calm those down with some of the nutrients, then you'll have more of a balanced picture. Okay, this is more important when we see people with totally out of balance numbers, but the more balance that you have, you want to keep your hormones all within those same ranges, so that that means they're optimally functioning. Make sense?
But by doing some sort of supplementation or foods that have more of that in it, that maybe that would help bring it into range without having to take yet another like hormone.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, if your estrogen was in the high range, I'd be also looking at aromatase. But I have a feeling, because your estrogens are in a decent range, that it's not necessarily aromatase. And I wouldn't want to inhibit it because you're a woman and you've had menstrual things, and I wouldn't want to inhibit and have you throw that off. So I wouldn't be working on aromatase inhibitors, but I would be working on the 5-alpha reductase inhibitors and the 5-beta reductase inhibitors. Make sense?
Say that again. You'd be working on the...
I would want to work on 5-alpha and 5-beta reductase inhibitors rather than aromatase inhibitors in you. Okay. If you had a presentation of estrogen dominance, then I would also be looking at aromatase inhibitors here, but you don't. Okay. Your estrogen's a little higher than the testosterone, but your estrogen's in a good range, and you can get into trouble with somebody if you try to inhibit their estrogen production and they're a female and they're of that age where we don't want to have estrogen going
well,
too
well. Before I was supplementing with the progesterone, like I was like estrogen dominant.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so you were. So, you know, inhibiting that might not be a problem, but...
That's
problem,
what my test results were coming back
were.
On the saliva
okay.
testing anyway.
Okay. Yeah, so this is a possibility then, given that history. But I would start with the 5-alpha and the 5-beta and then see what we can do if need be, if you're still symptomatic and stuff later. Make sense?
Right. Yeah, that
okay.
makes sense.
So I'm going to go back and look back at that chart so we can look at the... metabolites of, whoops, I gotta go one more, I think. There we go. We can look at the estrogen metabolites. So we've talked about the androgens enough. The progesterone, I'm not concerned about being too high because it is protective and you're not too high, but since you're taking it, I just drop it back a tiny bit. The estrogens, so we've got E1, E2, E3, they're all within range, but what we want to calculate here is the ratio, the estrogen quotient. So here's what I want you to do, because I don't want to do math on a call. Add up E1 and E2. Actually, it's 20, right?
Okay.
Okay. And then E3, which is estriol. Now, even though they're all in range, this is not a good ratio. You want the estriol divided by estrone and estradiol to be above 1.
Yours is, so I would do like the 10.7 divided by... 20,
yeah,
4.
Yeah, so you basically have a 0.5. Okay? And then when we can look back at that chart in a minute, but I know for a fact that iodine deficiency is one of the primary things that causes a problem there. There can be others, but we see really good switching.
I'm taking like an iodorol like supplementation for my thyroid.
And it's a caps the pill form versus the liquid form?
Yes, it's a pill form.
And how much do you take?
I think it's like 12.6 per
okay.
pill.
And have you done an iodine load test?
No.
Okay. And how much of that are you taking each day?
Just one of those little pills.
Just one. Okay. So I would recommend, let's look at the other factors regarding this, but I would recommend doing an iodine load test. You might temporarily need more than that, and also consider... If that still doesn't do it, then consider instead of iodorol doing something like Lugol's, which is the liquid form of iodorol. Iodine is hard to absorb, and if you have low stomach acid, you can have a problem with that.
Okay. Which is quite interesting because I went to my naturopath today, and she said that a lot of what I had going on was thyroid stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so you may not be getting enough, and you may have some bromine or fluoride toxicity, which the halide test will do. So rather than just iodine, I do the whole halide panel, the spot test with the challenge test, and see where that's at. And sometimes it's...
Is that something that I can do myself, or do I have to do that through a doctor?
Oh, no, just call Hakala Labs. Hakala Labs will do it for you. They're my favorite way to go get it.
Okay. How do you spell that?
Hakala.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so we're looking here, and we'll look at the little dials because they do have dials for the estrogen metabolites. Maybe they have them for the others too, I forget. But the 2OH is more of the protective metabolites. That's within range. Your 4OH is within range, but we are going to look at the dials because we want to see how they relate to each other. 4 is the dangerous metabolite. 16 is a dangerous metabolite. Yours is at the low end of the range. But then we look at the 216 ratio, and if that gets too low, you worry about bone. So we'll look at that in a moment. Same thing with methoxy. Okay, so your hydroxy, which is 2OH-E1, and methoxy, methylated, they're in a different part of the range. So you're not methylating as well. Likely from your 23andMe, you found some MTHFRs and some
MTHRRs.
Well,
MTRRs I haven't done the 23andMe, but the people, the gal that I talked to that went over my Dutch test, recommended that I get that done.
Yeah, I mean,
that was where she spent a lot of her time, was explaining, I mean, kind of why I should get that done. She thought that that was, there was like a methylation issue possibly, and I should get that test done.
Yeah, there definitely is a methylation issue here. And I would look at that too. Did she say anything else about those?
Okay, she said there's the A, gosh, how did she put that? She, on page 3 of the chart.
Oh, yeah. See, this is the one.
She went down to the bottom area where it says methylation.
Right.
Yep.
Yep.
And she said because that dial was in the low end.
Right.
Exactly. She said, I've got poor conversion.
Poor methylation. Yep.
Yeah. She said that can be from a nutritional deficiency or a genetic defect. She said it shows up more. Well, I had gotten the MTHFR tested a while ago, and so I told her what those numbers were, and she said that she thought it was probably more in the one that was responsible more for what my issue was is probably the COMT.
COMT, yeah.
And I don't have that tested yet, so that's why she recommended the 23andMe
will do it.
What was your MTHFR? Was it a homozygous, heterozygous?
Normal. Let me just grab that real quick.
Yeah.
I think I had one of them, not two.
Okay.
But let me just, I'll just grab that real quick.
While you do that, I'm going to talk about these estrogen metabolites. I forgot that these were here. I spent all that time going back and forth with the charts, but I forgot that they had these metabolites. Oh, okay. But I knew they had it for estrogen. So we have your estrone. Did she mention the ratios of these? So even though the estriol looks like it's in normal range, you really do want to do that ratio. You want to do the E3 over divided by E1 and E2, and it needs to be one or better. So you wouldn't notice it by just looking at these because they look like they're pretty balanced. But you also want to look at these metabolites. And when we look at the 4OH is okay. It's not in a dangerous level, but it's probably a tiny bit higher than I would want it to be. Your 2 is more protective, so that's good. And probably the reason the 2OH is higher is because you're not methylating it. But we look at these little pie charts, and I've seen some. I had somebody recently I looked at where her 4 was 40. See the 4? That's the red one. That's not so good. Her 4OH was like 40%. 40%. That's huge. 4OH is problematic for proliferation. It creates proliferation of tissue, especially for breast cancer. And so yours is fine. Yours is a tiny, tiny bit higher. I'm lower, actually.
If I could improve my 2OH, it would be...
No, if you could improve your methoxy E1. If you can improve this methylation, then yours is going to be perfect. The 16 is a little bit low. And I'm not sure. I haven't found any good literature on how to get the 16 up. And the 16 is actually protecting your bones. So they don't do the 2. I'll have to look back at the ratio that they do.
One of the things that she said was, like, in that top, you know, the dials that are colored.
Yeah.
Over, she said that represents phase 1 metabolism, and then the dial, well, the speed limit dial over on the bottom left represents more phase 2. Phase 2 detoxification.
This, which one did she say means phase 1?
where I have that written next to that.
Poor conversion. Oh, I see.
And she's like, that's what represents phase one, and then phase two is more like in the lower part.
Yeah, the methylation is part of phase two liver detoxification.
Yeah. And I got that SpectraCell. My MTHFR, like I have, it shows is the C677T mutation was negative and the A1298 mutation was heterozygous.
Yeah, so she's right about it's probably, you know, COMT, it could be MTRR. There's a number of them. There's some reason you're not getting enough methyl groups, and it can be helped. But it's not the folate part of it, which everybody looks at.
And the way to figure that out is to get the 23andMe.
Yeah, get the 23andMe and run it through the filters, and you'll be able to see it. Okay, so looking at this, let me go back to the androgens just because we hit that. And then here, so we've got the androstenedione goes down to eteoclonolone or endosterone and the testosterone. So this pathway, we're getting good levels of eteoclonolone and good levels of androsterone and lower levels here. So the 5-alpha, 5-beta. So here we're going to, the DHT goes down the beta pathway. They don't show that, but the DHT goes down the alpha and the other one goes down the beta. Oh, DHT goes down the alpha. So this is the one that we want to be careful about, right? Because it's the most potent. So I would say doing things to inhibit the 5. So 5-alpha reductase, write that down, 5-alpha reductase inhibitors. The ones that I know, I'll tell you, and then you can just go online and just look for some information about 5-alpha reductase inhibitors. Right, zinc. So look at zinc. And a lot of times people have to get up to 60 to 90 milligrams of zinc to get this conversion. Some people just small amounts. So
you
I don't know if you're
I've
actually
been taking
it.
Like zinc. Like
how much?
Zinc.
How much?
It's from Premier Research Labs, and I'm thinking taking.
Yeah, if you're taking a teaspoon or two, you're only in the 20 milligram range. So I would bump it up. You might want to, if it's too expensive to do with the liquid zinc, Good State has one that's a little bit less, but you can also get zinc picolinate and do that for a little while and see if that shifts it. But it may not be the zinc. Maybe your zinc's fine, but I do see that it shifts. It is a 5-alpha reductase inhibitor. And saw palmetto, which you could take as an herb. Most people think of that as a male hormone, right?
Right.
And the reason
I've heard
is
that before for men.
Okay, you have
to
because
build testosterone.
It's to decrease DHT, because it's used for prostate cancer. DHT is a potent androgen that contributes to prostate cancer. So saw palmetto is a potent 5-alpha reductase inhibitor. And it will decrease DHT. Now, a lot of times you have hair loss. I see this in women where they say, you know, I'm starting to lose my hair. And we did this recently, and I think I reported this in one of the clinical pearls. And I anticipated that this person was going to have a 5-alpha reductase problem, and sure enough, she did. She had super high levels of her estrogens. And so I was able to anticipate it based on what she was telling me, that whenever she went on like hormone kind of thing, when she went on saw palmetto, which is an aromatase inhibitor. So she went on Vitex, which is an aromatase inhibitor. Well, the aromatase inhibitor meant that she wasn't converting as much of her testosterone into estrogen. And so it made her feel better in terms of her fibroids, but she started losing her hair like crazy. So I'm thinking, what would that do? So aromatase inhibitor makes you convert less of your testosterone to estrogen, means you have more testosterone. So I said, well, why would she lose her hair? DHT, that's the contributor in male pattern baldness and female pattern baldness, quite frankly, too. So she had high DHT levels, and I anticipated it was because it aggravated it by her taking aromatase inhibitor. And the aromatase inhibitor she was taking was the Vitex. So although it helped her fibroid symptoms, it actually aggravated the hair loss. And given she was a woman who has a lot of vanity, like we all do, she wanted out. She was like, oh, I don't have as much pain with my fiber, but I don't want to lose my hair. So we wanted to give her balance in both areas. So we're putting her on DIM, and we're putting her on, you know, some 5-alpha reductase inhibitors to help that. Okay, so saw palmetto, if you're already taking zinc, maybe it isn't zinc. Maybe you have plenty of that, but you need, you know, the saw palmetto could help. And then it's like a borage oil or some of the GLA, basically, GLA. So borage oil, evening primrose oil, or black currant oil. So any of those.
And, like, how do I decide what kind of dosage I should take on some of those?
Well, that's a good question. So on zinc, I usually, like I said, it usually needs high levels of it. But if they're just doing zinc, I usually get them up to 50 to 75, even 90 milligrams a day, which is a lot of zinc, and it can throw off copper. But if you can do it with, like, I don't know the specific dose of saw palmetto, I'm a fan of just kind of watching it. But since you're not symptomatic, it's a little harder. If you were symptomatic, it'd be like, just keep increasing it until your hair stops falling out, right? Right. So you might want to look up what are some other symptoms of excess DHT and see if you have any of those symptoms. Right. If you were male, I'd be looking for benign prostatic hypertrophy, you know, getting up in the middle of the night to urinate because your prostate's enlarging, things like that. But look it up and see. So, and then with GLA, I'd probably go.
And I would just do that kind of like on a Google search, sort of?
You can do a Google search and look for good studies on, you know, what kind of symptoms are there of DHT.
Okay. I don't know.
So you said know off the top
zinc,
of my head much.
Saw palmetto, borage.
GLA. So GLA in the form of, I usually do borage because it's an inexpensive source. And I know that Barlean's has a liquid that's mixed with flax, so it keeps you in balance so you don't throw off your sixes and your threes. So that's a possibility. The other thing is, you know, if you want to know really how much GLA you should be taking, the blood spot fatty acid test is a real good way to do it. And you can look at that. And that gives you other inflammatory markers, the ratios between the omega-3s and sixes. So that's another way to know.
So I could, like, experiment with this a little bit, retest in 3 months with the Dutch test. If that doesn't come up, then do the blood spot fatty acid test.
Yeah, you can.
Is the blood spot fatty acid, is that something I can order, like, through my doctor? Like, how expensive of a test is that then?
Well if they'll order it, but it probably won't cover by insurance. We have it on our site, so you can order it through there, too.
Oh, okay.
Do we have an... No, we don't. We don't have an arrangement with Genova Metametrics because they weren't willing to do where they let you order through me. But you can order through my site. Just order it there.
Okay.
And it's about $150, so it's not terrible. But it's, you know, it adds up. But it's a good test. Oh, you know what? There's another lab that does one of those. And I think it's the lab that's a company. It's done through a company that makes the fish oil and they do salmon. Vital Choice. And I think theirs is about $100. So you might want to check out Vital Choice.
And is it called?
They won't call it blood spot. They may call it just Google Vital Choice fatty acid. And by the time I actually say that, Lynn probably has a link posted. So you know how she is. I haven't seen it. Yeah. Ah, so, you know, Steph says something like, yeah, of course, it's up there. It's up there already. What did I say? Is she amazing? Is she amazing or what? Does anybody want to comment on that? I barely have the words out of my mouth. She's freaking amazing. Steph says, I'm wondering if you've had symptoms of excess androgens. Yes, that could be, that definitely, that could be a sign that you've got excess as well. You know, and that's, you know, excess testosterone, but it could also be the DHT. Yep. Cool. All right. So we've got that handled. So I would go with the 5-alpha reductase inhibitors and try to get those things in balance, because even though you're not experiencing symptoms of it, I would nip it in the bud just in case. And you have had other experiences of, you know, menstrual issues and excessive bleeding and all that kind of stuff. So it's just worth getting it in balance. Okay?
So if this were you, would you just go ahead and bite the bullet, do the blood spot fatty acid test and the 23andMe, like, just get them done? Just to have a baseline?
Yeah. Well, I'm
a bad one to ask, but yeah, I would. I probably would, because, or I'd probably go out and get some GLA and Saw Palmetto and every test. I don't know what I would exactly do, but I think that the blood spot I've had done on myself, and I like that test, and I like doing it on people before you start going crazy with omega supplementation. So I think it's good experience for you to learn that test, because it's a test you want to do on people, because people are out there going nuts with omega-3 supplementation, and they can get themselves way out of balance. I just saw somebody's the other day, and she's only taking, I think, about 1,000 total, like she's doing the Omega Zen. And I'm like, why? We got her test back, and she was way off the charts, high in omega-3 and very low in omega-6. I'm like, why is this happening? So I start talking to her. Are you taking anything else besides that? No, just, are you taking any fish oils? No, I'm not taking any fish oils. I just put cod liver oil on my salad every day. Like, how much cod liver oil do you put on your salad every day? Oh, a couple of tablespoons. I don't measure. I just pour. Okay, I go, hey, you either got to stop that or stop the supplementation. I have to have it because I read about it. Like, okay, stop the other. So, you know, people don't realize. And you get into problems where you can bleed. You can increase the risk of stroke with too much omega-3, right? You increase the risk of blood clotting and inflammation with too little omega-3 and too much omega-6. But it is a balance. And one way to help people to get that balance is through the food chart. And it's a chart that I've given you in probably every program I do, I give. It's in the nutrients chart, but it's a spreadsheet, and it's an omega-3 balance spreadsheet. And Lynn might be able to find the link and put it up for us. But you can actually do it without having to do the testing. You can actually do it. But if there's metabolic things that might cause it to go off, even if they're out of balance. But most people are not in balance with their omega-3, 6. But we would find for her, she might have been way on the other skewed side if she was doing that charting. Because she was taking flaxseed pudding and chia seed porridge and the cod liver oil. Plus she was taking a supplement. So she was way skewed on the other side.
See, I take a supplement, but I guess I don't really go overboard on the flaxseed.
Right, and you may not, but I would say get the test. What the heck? It's part of your education, and it's part of your health. It's not that expensive. And the more of these tests you can do on yourself, the more comfortable you'd feel, and the more you'll know when to do it. I'm not an over-tester. I don't have somebody come in and do $1,000 of tests off the top. I would look at their diet. I would look at that sheet. I would get an estimate of what they're eating. But if I get a test that shows they may have some issues. But what would I do in your situation? I would probably get the saw palmetto probably the borage. I have some Omega Twin. It's called Omega Twin is the oil. I'd probably start using my Omega Twin more, and I would probably increase my zinc and take it more regularly, and maybe consider saw palmetto as well.
And for the saw palmetto, would you take that in like capsule form, or would you just add that to like your smoothie? Or,
you know, I don't know if we can get it. If you can get it in that form, I would look into it, because I'm not sure if it's, you know, if you have to do an infusion of it to get extracted, if it's an oil or an alcohol infusion is better. I'm not sure. I don't use saw palmetto all that much. Me personally, I'd probably go with the GLA and the, given your numbers aren't terrible, I'd probably go with the GLA and the zinc to start and see how it goes. You know? I don't know. I'd have to sit in that situation, but those are the possibilities.
Okay.
It's not an exact science, but there is a lot of science here, right? So there's a lot more here than you even got from talking to the person at the lab, right?
Yeah. I mean, she talked a little bit about my, that chart on the first page. It's got like the daily free cortisol pattern.
Right.
The only other thing she mentioned really was that my morning cortisol was lower than where it should be. And I'm like, you know, I was like bottomed out, like flatlined when I did my first like saliva testing.
Right.
So, I mean, I think it's improved quite a bit from this chart. But the morning is still really low. And I'm like, you know, that's makes sense because I'm, like when I wake up in the morning, like there a lot of times I'm like, wow, I could like stay in bed a little longer. I feel tired when I wake up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And So I mean, that's kind of, I guess that's kind of reaffirming that that's what's happening, because my cortisol is lower than it should be. But she made it sound like I might want to think about, well, she mentioned if it's low in the morning, that I should look at blood sugar regulation. She said it could have to do with that.
It's possible. Have you been monitoring it?
I don't know. That's all I have written down for that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's not terrible. So they do it a little bit differently. So the timing of these was, this is first thing in the morning, and then this is mid-morning. So tell me the timing. I forget what the timing is. Then they do 4, and then they do night.
I think you do it, like, when you get up in the morning. I think I'm just going to look at this and just see if I marked down, like, if it shows, like, what times I actually took it. Like, I took it, the first P1 was at 5:30 in the morning. No, actually, they have you start in the evening, so 5:30 p.m. And then I took it at bedtime, 9:45, and then you do like your, I think your first morning urine, like 6 a.m. was when I got up and did that one, and then you wait like 2 hours and you do another one.
Okay.
So, I mean, that was the draws and the times. So I don't know how that really, I guess waking would be the 6 a.m. and then the morning would be 8.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Times are different than the other tests. But yeah, I mean, overall, it's just that very first one in the morning. And you can look at some of that stuff.
Which usually I'm not awake at 6 a.m.
Well,
I mean, since
not
I've had all this.
That hour.
I don't normally get up that early. But I was, since I've had all these adrenal issues, I've been really tired. I mean, I used to get up between like 6:30 and 7. And what I find now is like, I want to sleep till like 7:30. So,
what time do you go to bed?
And then when I wake up, I like am tired. I usually go to bed, I would say between 10 and 10:30.
Okay.
Sometimes it's, you know, 9:45. Sometimes it's 10. I usually don't try to be.
Okay.
You know,
so sleeping
still at 10:30.
You're getting more than 8 hours of sleep a night.
I know, and I'm tired.
Yeah.
It's just.
And you're still
so
tired. Yeah, and is it restful sleep? Because I'd be concerned that it might not be restful sleep.
It is. I mean, once in a while I'll have a night or two where I don't sleep good. I mean, my husband travels, so when he comes home, usually the first couple nights he's home, I don't sleep as well.
Yeah.
Just, I think, trying to get used to having someone in bed with me. I know that sounds really weird, but...
Yeah.
But, you know, when I was having, like, my back issues, I wasn't sleeping at all. Like, I was waking up, like, throughout the night, like, the whole night, and I don't think I was getting a good block of sleep time. But I would have to say, you know, when I go to bed now, like... I feel like I might wake up to turn over or something, but, like, I pretty much, I'm not, like, up all night long.
You may be,
you know, or waking throughout.
You may be playing catch up. You might be able to boost that up by just continuing your adaptogens and things like that and helping to support it. You might be able to boost it with maybe the Bs, looking at the B vitamins or C and seeing where that is.
Well, I've been doing, like, the B vitamins and vitamin C.
And B5? Are you doing 5? Like, B5? Okay.
Yep. Like, 3 times a day?
Yeah, so I would say keep doing what you're doing with that. Maybe increase some of your adaptogens if you feel comfortable doing that, because it's still on the low end of the range in the at the first morning. It's like almost to mid-range, but not super high. So you might continue to do that. I would continue. Do you do the licorice as soon as you wake up?
Well, when I first get up, I do the Odorol and the Selenium, and then, like, a couple minutes later, I do, like, the Pregnenolone, the DHEA, and the licorice.
Yeah.
So pretty much right away.
I would say. But the other thing is, because this isn't your normal time of wakening, it's good to catch it, to know that you're low there, but you would have known that just because you don't want to get up at that hour. I'm sure mine is all skewed. So I would focus on these other things that seem to be a little bit more important. Maybe up your doses on some of your adaptogens and then go from there.
Now, one of the things that I saw my naturopath today, and she really thinks that I know you probably might not, you probably won't be on the same page here, but she seems to think that, like, my thyroid is really out of balance, like I should consider, like, going on, like, Armour Thyroid or, like, Nature Thyroid, just because she muscle tests me for different supplements for the thyroid stuff that she has there.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, you know, what she said was, if I could prescribe medication, I would have you go on like a heavier duty supplementation right now.
So here's what you can consider with that. I don't know. I haven't seen your tests. I don't see what your ratios are. Take your thyroid test, put them in your master tracker, look at the little Dr. Rind thing that I have in there, and put it in there and see where your numbers line up. And it's possible that that's true. It's possible that you might get some results by looking at some of the restorative thyroid functions, and it might be because of the iodine. So I would do the iodine load before and look at the thyroid numbers before deciding whether to do that or not. And bring them to a call so I can look at them because, you know. Okay?
Okay. So, and the halidite panel is the one that I can get from the...
Yeah, Hakala. Yep.
Hakala.
Yeah, and you just tell them you want the spot test plus the challenge test for all the halides. And that'll do iodine, bromine, and fluoride. Okay.
Okay. So spot test and the challenge test for all the halides.
Yeah. So you want their deluxe panel, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. So do that first, and then see where that's at before I decide whether or not to do anything else with the thyroid part of it.
Yeah, and then put your numbers in so we can look at them. So, you know, yeah. And then the other thing is, you know, get started on some of that aromatase stuff because that'll help. And, yeah, all the other stuff we talked about. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay, bye-bye. Okay. I'm going to look to see any questions. I mean, it was a lot longer than I thought, but I think it was a good learning opportunity, and hopefully you guys might have other questions. So, questions about that or questions about stuff that you brought to the call that you wanted to talk about.